It's 6 months. You haven't paid rent.
Get out.
It's my house.
It is his house, but the man inside who won't pay rent keeps him from using it. Likewise, the owner of this house left town for 3 weeks, only to return and find...
There were cars in the driveway and people inside.
When he confronted them, they said...
No, we're living here. We have a lease.
The squatters didn't have a lease. But today, squatters often claim they do, go to a house and take it over. Bizarrely, laws favor the squatter.
In New York State, you cannot legally lock a squatter out of your home or turn off utilities. And once a squatter is there for 30 days, they are classified as a tenant.
Is there anything a homeowner can do about it? Well, Flash Shelton came up with a clever idea.
This man is on a mission to take back his parents' house after he says squatters moved in.
I just felt like, if they can take a house, I can take a house.
This was his mom's house. She left it briefly after his dad passed away. When squatters took over the house, Shelton did what I would have done.
I called law enforcement, and there was nothing they could do.
Why can't the cops evict somebody?
Because the crazy laws don't allow them to.
So Shelton came up with this bizarre solution.
I realized I could go in as the squatter myself, gain possession of the property.
Because the law so favors squatters, he became a squatter. When the home invaders left for a few hours, Shelton slipped into the house and changed the locks.
I had them locked out before they even knew that somebody wanted them out.
The squatter comes back, finds the door locked, screams, says, I have a right to be there, and you just don't let him in?
I don't let him in.
After that work, Shelton started SquatterHunters.com, a business that tries to help others get their houses back. In Los Angeles, he confronted the man who took over this house.
He answered an ad to rent a room. And before he was accepted to rent the room, he walked in with a backpack and he refused to leave. I decide to go do a squatter intervention and I show up with cameras and surprise him in the driveway.
I understand you've been squatting at this residence?
No.
No?
No, I have a lease.
You have a lease?
Huh?
Okay.
But he soon admitted.
And you have a lease?
No, she didn't want to give me a lease.
This squatter is Adam Fleischman. He was rich once.
My good friend Adam Fleischman, Umami. How are you, Adam?
Here he is being interviewed about starting the Umami Burger restaurant chain. This was a successful guy who ran restaurants, started restaurants.
Yeah, I've seen video clips of him on TV. He was kind of a little famous on his own. So it made no sense.
We tried to reach Fleischman without success.
What are you hoping to gain here?
I'm not trying to gain anything. I'm a victim here.
How is he a victim?
The video shows him just so entitled, and it just really couldn't make any sense out of what he was saying.
The city still protects tenants whether they get a lease or not. You didn't know that?
I'm laughing because
it's regulations.
It's so arrogant.
Just the words and the arrogance.
The squatter even called the police. This wasn't his house. He has no legal right to be there.
So he felt that since he had possession of the house, which is true, that he had the right to call law enforcement and have me removed.
And where does he hear this, that he has this right to squat?
The city was telling him this.
The LA City Council approved a package of new policies Friday aimed at protecting tenants.
City politicians are so eager to favor tenants, they protect squatters. But now Shelton was a squatter too. One who threatened to bring his friends.
We'll be here to help you leave.
More fair.
Only then did Adam Fleischman get a mover and leave.
People think of these people as homeless, destitute.
They are not homeless people. They're criminals. They're people that are taking advantage of the system.
And no, you're harassing me.
I have a
you're
lease.
You're harassing me.
I have a lease for this property.
This woman claimed to be a caretaker for the elderly owner of this house. But the owner wanted the woman out. She gave Shelton a lease.
I have a lease for this property.
I don't give a the guy. You haven't introduced yourself to me. I don't even know what the you look like.
I've left
you ain't
notices.
Gonna be sneaking up on me in the middle
I've
of the night.
Notices.
You ain't gonna be sneaking up on me in the middle of the night.
One day when she was out, Shelton went into the house and changed the locks. But the squatter is still there?
Still there, climbing through the window because she doesn't have access to the main house.
So she's still there for how many months?
She's been there for 2 years.
2 years? Now someone started a GoFundMe page to help the elderly homeowner. Once she finds a new residence, then...
You and maybe your six friends will move in.
And that works?
That will work.
How do you know?
Because she'll have to leave. And once I take possession, then she'll have to fight in court to try to get back in. And most likely, she won't do that.
You ever worry about the squatter attacking you?
Well, I don't go in anymore by myself.
You're trespassing. Good. And no, you're harassing me.
How do the squatters manage to think of themselves as victims?
Landlords are social parasites. They provide no social value.
Maybe squatters listen to people like this New School professor, a self-described Marxist who calls landlords parasites.
They are so focused on extracting money that they perceive people's basic need for a shelter as an opportunity to generate substantial profits.
They can make a profit without having to do very much, if any, work.
This socialist on TikTok has more than 1 million followers. She says landlords
are granted and guaranteed forever incomes without actually having to put in any labor.
They don't put in labor?
This house is sold!
Who do they think buys the land, pays lawyers to decipher the excessive regulations, hires architects, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, pays the taxes, and manages the property?
They should make an income because they're actually helping.
But city politicians now win elections trashing landlords. And laws are so anti-landlord that homeowners sometimes get arrested if they change locks to get a squatter out.
Arrested for unlawful eviction.
This woman had come into the house she owned and confronted squatters.
You shouldn't be trying to steal my house. Yes, you are.
She locked the squatter out, but he broke back in.
You broke through the front door.
Officer.
The squatter then called the police, and the police told the owner to leave.
So why is it that I have to leave and he doesn't have to leave?
Because technically he can't be kicked out. We need to go to court.
Then she got arrested because this squatter knew the magic words to say to police. I have a lease. But when this reporter said,
I would like to see it.
He didn't show him a lease.
This is a bill. This is...
Law enforcement can't even ask for the lease because they're not allowed to decipher if it's a real lease or not.
You should know how the law works.
I do know how it works.
There's rules to the... As you got to go to court and send me to civil court.
Some homeowners just throw up their hands, give up.
Homeowners can't afford this. So at some point, they're making the decision if it's worth it to even fight or just walk away from their homes. And then the squatter wins.
It is infuriating. I'm glad people like Flash Shelton fight back. If you find this infuriating too, please share this video.
A prediction I made 2 years ago that my fear is confidence breaking in the United States. This whole system is predicated upon the assumption that the government is strong. Why do people fear like, hey, I can't commit a crime or I can't, you know, sometimes it could be something minor as jaywalking. People are like, no, I probably shouldn't do that. Why? Because they fear the repercussions for transgressing against a powerful force like the U.S. government. Same thing about the U.S. dollar. Why does it have value? Because people believe it does. So if you say if you do X for me, I'll give you $10. I'm like, that $10, I know I can trade somewhere else. What if one day you woke up and you had money and you went to the store and they said, I want that. And you're like, wait, but it's money. It's like, I don't care. All of a sudden, you'd be like, well, then I'm not interested in collecting more of it because it's not working. You'd have to find some other means. My fear last year or the year before, and I was saying this, is that it comes to the point where maybe in Nebraska or in Nevada or something, New Mexico, a small town just decides federal law doesn't apply to us anymore. We don't know what's going on in Congress. Nothing's getting done. Our border is under attack. You get a small town, maybe it's 1,000, 2,000 people. They have a city meeting where a quarter of the population shows up and everyone's yelling and rabble, rabble, rabble. And then a couple of guys who are local militia guys just say, we are not going to sit around and wait for the feds to deal with this when we have criminal aliens invading our country, bringing drugs and violence. We need to set up checkpoints now and figure it out later. That's what you get. My fear is that eventually there will be a truck trying to come for a delivery through the highway. And there's going to be four guys, just militia guys, and they put their hands up, stop the truck and say, what can I do for you?
See, this is the problem with anarcho-tyranny is that the government would immediately send the army to go take care of that
little
issue.
Not if it happens all over the place. My point is confidence, not a single group of individuals in one place. If confidence breaks that the U.S. government is no longer enforcing the law, which is exactly what we're seeing with Donald Trump, this comes next year, right? And maybe not totally wrong. It's just a hypothetical. Potential scenario based on the probabilities. If Donald Trump loses, you already have, over the past 4 years, what is it, 70% of the Republican Party saying Trump actually won and Joe Biden's not the president. What do you think happens if Joe Biden wins again with this on the border, with the border literally being attacked? People in Texas are going to start saying, we need to start enforcing this ourselves. There's no government. When you have hordes of non-citizens coming in your community, sleeping in your streets, there's rape, there's murder. Lake and Riley, for instance, you're going to get some guys who just say, here's what we do. We go to our street corners. We have neighborhood watch patrols guard our neighborhoods. We get radios and we make sure these people don't come in. Then when someone comes in for a delivery, they stop and say, what can I do for you? Say, I'm here with a delivery. What's your delivery? Where are you going? Who are you going to? Okay, you're cleared to enter.
No. They start, open up the back of the truck. Let's take a look before you
absolutely.
Let you in.
Absolutely. And then they say, sorry for stopping you, man, but with everything we're seeing on the border, this starts in Texas. It'll happen in Oklahoma. The federal government will not be able to do this. There are not enough federal law enforcement or U.S. military personnel, not to mention they couldn't under Posse Comitatus anyway. There's not enough federal law enforcement to be able to go across the country if even 100 of these scenarios begin to emerge, where people in their local communities feel like the government isn't functioning anymore. And it can start very simply, but it can start overnight. You've got Congress, impotent, unable to get anything done. The border is being overrun. Everyone knows. Democrats in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, all major cities are screaming about this. You've got people in the black community in Chicago screaming at Democrats saying we are being replaced. While the media is claiming that if you say you're being replaced, you're a white supremacist. The system is not functioning anymore. So I fear it's only a matter of time now, especially as we're entering the warmer months, and this is going to crank up dramatically, that it's going to be seven guys in a small town here, 15 guys in a small town there. They're going to say, I don't care about Tim Pool. I don't care about Crowder. I don't care about Rogan. I don't care about CNN. I don't care about Trump. I don't care about Biden. All I know is some guy came and murdered my neighbor's kid. And then they're going to set up their neighborhood watch, and you're going to have pockets of sovereign self-law enforcement in their own communities. Local police departments will probably be on board with a lot of these groups, and they'll start defying federal law more than they already do.
This is something that Lincoln Riley's dad mentioned the other day when he was addressing the Georgia Senate, which is that the millions of illegal immigrants who have entered the country are making, the quote was, making families nervous. Like, they are now concerned, like you're saying, that not only is the federal government not going to stop in to protect them at the border, but also the state government is not going to protect them either, because he pointed out that the city where University of Georgia's campus is in is a sanctuary city.
Yep.
And so all the steps failed that we're supposed to believe in. We're supposed to believe that the government's in place is there to protect our citizens. And instead, he gives this emotional speech talking about how he has basically lost his purpose because his daughter is gone because of someone who we knew was here illegally and who got arrested in New York. So there were steps along the way at which this person could have been, you know, deported. And instead, he arrived in a sanctuary city and allegedly murdered Lincoln Riley. I mean, it's a tragedy, but the more examples that we have of these things, the more fathers like Jason Riley will exist and will say, we are losing confidence in you guys.
Well, but it's also, I mean, you could say the same thing about just the overall rate of violent crime in America, where you've got people like Daniel Penny. I mean, they're making an example out of him specifically to say, like, if you try to do the government's job for us, you know, we don't care about the criminals. We can't do anything. Apparently, we're completely impotent to stop the criminals, but they are very good at stopping people who stand up to the criminals. And I don't want to underestimate the power of the federal government, because, I mean, when they want to clean something up, it gets cleaned up. Look at what happened a couple years ago with the Haitians, where there were, like, it was at Eagle Pass, Texas. There were thousands of them encamped. It was continuous. It was getting worse and worse. More were flowing in. And the moment it became embarrassing for the federal government, the next day it was cleaned up, totally cleaned up. Like, the tents were gone, the trash was gone, the people were gone.
But this is,
it's a choice. These spot removal.
The federal government does not have the ability to contain dozens across the country all at once. They struggled with the Bundy ranch, with the Bundy family scenario. They struggled with it. It was a big problem, and they're desperately trying to retaliate against the Bundys because of what happened. Ammon specifically, I think they threw him back in jail. When it comes to the point where there is no confidence at a wide level, which is where we are going, New York doesn't so much matter to the big picture. New York is New York. New York will do what New York is going to do. The cops in New York, do you know why the National Guard and the cops are in the subways checking bags? That's not to stop crime. It's to stop you.
Right.
Because Daniel Penny committed an act of vigilantism. Because there was a video or photo from November of a guy opening fire with a revolver, I believe, in the subway because of a mugger. They don't care about the crime. They care about vigilantes. They want to check your bag to make sure the next time someone commits crime, you don't stop them.
Right. Well, it's, and it's also just getting people used to the idea of having a soldier with an automatic rifle checking your bags because you're going on the subway. I mean, it's inuring us to the concept of military occupation.
But this will happen in cities, but it's not going to be the same outside of cities. The challenge for the federal government is always going to be that they do not have the manpower. No law enforcement agency has the manpower for their jurisdiction. It may have been the case 200 years ago, but it's not been the case for at least 70 years. New York, for instance, has an estimated, what is it, 30,000 police officers? Someone want to Google the number? I think if you include support personnel, it might be like 38,000. There's 2.5 million people on Manhattan Island alone. If 1% of Manhattan Island was rioting through the streets, you would not be able to coordinate third shift. A police force is doing anything about it. They would have to call in neighboring police in an emergency, call in the National Guard. If 10%, not even 10, 5%, if 5% of New York City, and I would say Manhattan Island, let's say the entire New York metro coalesces in Manhattan for a protest. There's 13 men, 10% is a million people, and they all are just rioting. It's over instantly. So people often overestimate the strength of the federal government because of what is called spot removal, meaning something spikes and the federal government targets it and eradicates it.
Right.
So you get a mass shooter, law enforcement go in. But what if you get 50 all at once? They do not have the managerial power to coordinate against something like that. And this is my concern.
Well, but the thing is, they're already putting the things in place to stop it from ever getting to that eventuality by saying that white supremacy is the number one threat, by targeting the militia movement. They're piecemeal going through and stopping.
But you misunderstand. What I'm saying is it is those actions which is putting in the minds of regular Americans across the country, there is no government. And so the federal government can come out and accuse white people of being racist all day and night. They can put in these policies where we see things saying, like, if you want to get this job, you can't be white, which we literally just saw in a viral X post. Mm-hmm. And all that's doing is cracking away at confidence that government actually exists. So there will not be a capability of the 16,000 federal law enforcement agents or whatever to deal with 50 different instances across the country of not even violent riots, quite literally just local militias setting up checkpoints. At that point, they're going to be like, where do we go now to try and stop this? Eventually, more people start breaking away. They say California has not respected the law in 20 years. California says Texas is defying the Supreme Court. Texas says California is defying the Supreme Court. You've got Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland have jurisdictions that have declared themselves two-way sanctuaries and are refusing to enforce state and federal law pertaining to guns. It is just breaking apart very, very slowly. And eventually, it will just be hyper-localized. New York will say, all we can do is New York. The federal government will say, we only have access to certain areas, so let's secure our resources in the areas that matter most. But there's going to be lost areas that are just going to fall into civilian militia control.
Do you want the NYPD data really quick?
Yeah, how many people?
So in 2023, there were just under 34,000 officers. And in 2000, it was at its all-time high with just over 40,000 officers.
Yeah, so, and I think a third of them are support staff, meaning they don't actually have guns.
They and they're reporting that they're well under what they're budgeted for, meaning that they are losing people quickly and they don't have the staff that they theoretically think they need.
I think there's like this fantasy, this technocratic fantasy that one day we'll have enough control of our population that we'll have drone surveillance and militia. Like, yeah, you might have 30 different militias in 30 different places, but we've got the drones. Because right now, like you're saying, the humans can't organizationally handle that kind of breakout, but drones can. But LOL, it's a freaking fantasy, you guys. If the power goes out, first of all, secondly, you cannot contain local rebellion, not on a mass scale.
Thanks for watching this clip from the Timcast IRL podcast. Hang out with us live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. and become a member over at timcast.com for uncensored, members-only shows exclusive. Thanks for hanging out. And we'll see you all next time.
In case you felt Republicans in Congress were vaguely interested in reining in the out-of-control federal spending that's driving the economy to stagflation and leaving the American people to fight over the crumbs they are not. Last week, as widely expected, GOP Speaker Johnson caved on another $1.2 trillion in spending, handing the Dems everything their grabby little hearts could desire. Now, one might argue this is disappointing since the Republicans control the House, meaning they control, in theory, the purse strings, as in, if they don't pass a budget, nothing gets spent. Of course, that power is completely neutered since Republicans are afraid of shutting down the government because they'll get blamed by the left-wing media for making grandma eat the cat food. This pork-packed spending bill was over 1,000 pages long, plus another 932 pages of, quote, explanatory statements, which is where they stuff all the really ugly things. Naturally, it was released at 3 a.m. since our government is deeply proud of the work it does. It funds a bevy of six agencies for the next 6 months and also includes fun little Easter eggs like a new National Red Flag Center that will spend $750 million, implying it will hire thousands of agents, to attack your Second Amendment rights. In fact, those goons might even be housed at the FBI's new $200 million headquarters, also funded by this bill, presumably as a reward for being so helpful, hunting down peaceful protesters who the regime does not like. So in short, the uniparty swamp wins again. National debt will continue growing. At the moment, it's running $1 trillion every 100 days, while, of course, the Republicans managed to get precisely nothing done about our gaping wound of a southern border or any of the other major promises. Now, in fairness, the $1.2 trillion bill does do a lot of other things. It funds legal immigrant nonprofits, hormone therapies for regendering kids, and it gives $500,000 for the NAACP's new headquarters. Note, the NAACP is, in theory, not actually a government agency. Along with $1 million for an LGBT community center in Philly that will help it fund monthly fetish parties. While I freely admit that monthly fetish parties are an important federal function, one might ask if there's not something else we could have spent the money on, like, say, a border. Moreover, these are not just about corruption. They illustrate how the deep state works. So the left uses tax money to fund its own activist army, while the GOP is happy to hold their beer, so long as there's some artillery in there for Ukraine. And you might remember during Trump, every time the media pearl-clutched over some fresh tweet, there was an insta-mob of hundreds protesting the street in about 15 minutes flat. Asked why the right cannot summon instant mobs, the running joke was that our people have jobs. But the much darker truth is that the left's activists are literally paid to protest. They are paid by you, a literal tax-funded activist army, funded $1 million at a time. So what's next? Brought to you by Unchained.com. At this point, the federal deficit is approaching 8% a year, which is the kind of number you only see if we are in the depths of a major recession or the depths of a major war. For that to be happening in relative peacetime, both economically and kinetically, suggests Washington has completely lost control. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
This happened on the eastern side of El Paso. We are told by CBP officials that there were a number, several hundred migrants that essentially overwhelmed a number of Texas National Guard soldiers. All of these migrants were taken into Border Patrol custody, and they are right now being processed by Border Patrol. They were put on buses. We're not exactly sure what instigated this. We were told by Border Patrol officials here in this region that there hasn't been any kind of sign of rising tensions between migrants and Border Patrol officials and National Guard soldiers.
That was, by any journalistic standards, the video of the day that should have led every newscast, but did not end up hardly anywhere. So CNN covered a little bit. Fox did, of course. Nobody else did. CBS had a few seconds of it. I just saw it on NBC today. They didn't cover it at all yesterday. But you had hundreds of illegals in a melee with Texas Guard there at the border. It looked like a medieval battle. And there's right. Dust everywhere. And the video footage, just the way it was lit and the angle, I mean, it was very captivating video. The fact that they didn't have that on their evening newscast, that's a journalistic decision to ignore something that is great video. I think that's a good illustration of the depth of their ideological capture, I guess is the fancy word people use these days. But their ideology trumped not only their, you know, their truth-telling and their patriotism, but it even trumped their greed. Because, you know, as TV news people and news website operators, it's all about the clicks, man. Those were great clicks. But that's so interesting, though. It took a day. But the ideological types were defeated, apparently, if the Today Show's running this video by A, people who believe in journalism, or more likely, B, people who realize this is really sexy video.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to have known the behind-the-scenes arguing over that. Your argument for why that wasn't on the news last night had to be full of crap.
Oh, my gosh. There can't be one. It's idiotic.
This is going to cause people to think that most illegals are violent, and we don't want to portray that because this is just a couple of hundred people trying to beat down Texas Guard. It's not representative of the average beleaguered...
Oh, my God, did you say illegals? The term all of a sudden, for reasons nobody can cite, is migrants. Please use migrants. Right. Again, where'd that come from and why? Anyway, the theme continues in a way. Have a great gender-bending madness update later on. We'll get to it at some point. The other day, I was reading from a piece that said the transgender craze is over. Friends, I beg of you to hear my words. This is not the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. We're going to have to work hard for a long time to stamp out this madness. But along with the gender... Yes?
I love it when you quote Churchill, especially when you say, in the morning, though, I will be sober and you will still be ugly. That's my favorite Churchill quote.
That may be my favorite quote from anybody. Mr. Churchill, you are drunk. Yes. But in the morning, I will be sober, but you will still be ugly. At any rate, where were we? Along with the gender-bending madness coming to more and more people's attention, so people are starting to push against it, the fake racism madness that was a conflagration, sometimes literally, after the George Floyd thing, is starting to get people's attention. And y'all activists like us, we've been aware of this stuff and fighting against it for a long time, the whole woke DEI, Black Lives Matter crap. But I think Mr. and Mrs. America, and particularly Mr. and Mrs. I'm a suburban person, I've got a college degree of good conscience, are starting to, like the TV executives not running that video, starting to realize, wow, this is crazy. I really need to admit this is crazy on the racism front. To wit, Michael, we need, and I'm sorry, I should have warned you, clip 67 here. This is a young woman by the name of Danny Lalanders, who is a game developer, as in video games.
I have a team of 21 right now for Validate. It's a pretty big team. It's a crazy big team for indie games. But who is your team? Validate has a team of mostly all people of color. We have no white people on our team. I did that because I wanted to create a safe environment. And I know the best way for an environment to be safe is to be around people who are just like me. And I'm not saying that white people in the industry are creating safe, unsafe environments. I'm not saying that. That is not what I'm saying. I am saying that sometimes it is hard to work with white people because they think that something may be okay, but it was really a microaggression. And no one wants to deal with that while they're trying to make a game that they love.
All right, so she's a segregationist, and that used to be out of fashion, but if you're the right person, you get to advocate for it.
Well, first of all, I've been saying this for many, many years. Diversity generally is code for, I want more people that look like me. I need to live in a more diverse neighborhood. But if you went to a neighborhood where everybody was your skin color, whatever it is, you'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah, that's not diverse at all.
No, right. you want more people like you, which is fine. That's perfectly normal. I think it just seems to be human nature.
Every word used by the woke is a code word. They do not say what they mean. Diversity doesn't mean diversity. It means more people who think like me. And generally, it's people of color because we have a thing about that in the country. And so it's a great dodge. Anyway, that's just Exhibit A. Then you have Microsoft bragging about paying minorities more than whites for the same work. Every bit as illegal as violating federal law as the racist gal we just heard from. They're faking backlash after
bragging in a recent diversity report that they pay white employees less than racial minorities in similar roles. The report boasts that Asian employees make more than both black and white employees with matching job titles, levels, and tenure. Microsoft touts in its 2023 diversity and inclusion report its pay equity agenda, where they specifically and intentionally pay people differently by race. How is this happening?
Yeah, how's that possibly legal?
James Lindsay, from whom I got that wisdom about every word is a code word with the woke people, and you just need to know what they mean, what the code means, pointed out that you have these consultant firms putting out how-tos for positive discrimination, what it is and how you can implement it. Positive discrimination refers to preferential treatment aimed at bringing underrepresented groups to the level of equity in the workplace. And one of the things James gets into with his usual clarity and eloquence is that there's no such thing as positive discrimination. If one person is discriminated against positively and there was another person going for that job, by definition, if you gave that person 55, you gave the other person 45%. So it's just good old discrimination, no matter what sort of idiotic, transparent code words you use. And I'm looking at the clock. We need to skip ahead to the punchline, which is too bad because I got some more good stuff. But even the New York Times, in a highly placed article today, the ACLU said a worker used racist tropes and fired her. But did she? Civil Liberties Group is defending itself in an unusual case that weighs what kind of language may be evidence of bias against black people. Stay tuned for unintentional hilarity. So this woman, Kate O., O-H, she's Korean-American, she's a bit of a firebrand, worked for the ACLU. She was no one's idea of a go-along-to-get-along employee. She unleashed unsparing critics of her superiors, sending long blistering emails to human resources complaining about what she described as a hostile workplace. You know, I need to pause now. I'm reminded of the Socialists of America with their conference, where they just can't get anything done because everybody keeps throwing their wokeisms at each other. And so this woman works for the ACLU and is constantly complaining that it's a hostile workplace. And now they've fired her for making it a hostile workplace. But anyway, she had all sorts of complaints about sexism, unmanageable workloads, a fear-based culture. Then the tables turned. This is where it gets interesting. And Ms. O was the one slapped with an accusation of serious misconduct. The ACLU said her complaints about several superiors, all of whom were black, used racist stereotypes. Oh, boy. You're about to hear some racist stereotypes on the air, all right? Prepare yourself. The ACLU acknowledges that Ms. O never used any kind of racial slur, but the group says her use of certain phrases and words demonstrated a pattern of willful anti-black animus. Here you go. Brace yourselves now. In one instance, according to court documents, she told a black superior that she was afraid to talk to him. Oh, telling a black person you're afraid. Dog whistle. In another, she told a manager that their conversation was chastising. Oh, another dog whistle, I guess. And in a meeting, she repeated a satirical phrase likening her boss's behavior to suffering beatings.
Oh, wow. So your boss...
That's right. She used the old, the beatings will continue until morale improves joke. That's so time-worn, it's a cliche, but it's amusing.
That's funny. If your boss can't chastise you, I don't know. How are they going to...
Well, and the ACLU, and, you know, you almost admire their pluck for even trying this. Trying to claim that an employee said, I'm afraid to bring this up with you. Why? Because I'm black? I felt chastised by you chewing me out in front of others. Why? Because I'm black? And then, yeah, the beatings will continue until morale improves. Ha, ha, ha. Why do you say that? Because I'm black? And I think people are just starting to wake up to this. Even the New York Times, and of course they tap dance like Gregory Hines through this story, but they're saying essentially, the heart of the ACLU's case, arguing for an expansive definition of what constitutes racist or racially coded speech has struck some labor and free speech lawyers as peculiar, since the organization has traditionally protected the right to free expression. People are waking up to how insane, unjust, and brutal all this stuff is, and how racist it is. But again, this is not the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. There's a hell of a lot of work to do.
I was just told in my ear by our executive producer that tap dancing, like Gregory Hines, famous tap dancer, is a microaggression. So
he's a brilliant tap dancer who I've admired since I was a child.
Because you've
whether he's black or not. Savion Glover. What am I supposed to do about the fact that the three greatest tap dancers of the last century have been black men? What do you want me to do about that? Again, that's a perfect indication of how stupid all of this is.
Speaking of the New York Times, this piece that just came out on why we're not having children anymore will be hilarious to you if you have kids and you're raising them and doing all the stuff that normal people do. We got to jump into the fact that Trump is going to have his kids' childhood home seized over the weekend. This giant estate, it looks like the state of New York is going to take away from him. Put chains around or something. Kick everybody out. Lots of news on the way. Stay here.
Armstrong and Getty.